Hello and welcome to the Amber Spycast, your one-stop shop for all things His Dark Materials. It's been a long wait for this episode. April 10th, when was that? I don't know what day it is or month it is. Who am I? Juana? Travis? Who are we?
I don't know anymore.
A brief update on what's going on. We certainly recorded during the pandemic last time. I don't know, considering I have time on my side, because I'm at home all the time, I find that it has been a little challenging to get motivated a little bit. I got a lot of stuff to do, but like, it's hard to get motivated. So maybe that's my excuse. It's not a good excuse. And I've been listening to a lot of other podcasts and thinking, why am I not doing this? This is I like doing it. So I should be able to easily get motivated. Any other tips from you guys about this?
Well, I spent the first half of this completely catatonic, basically. You know, I'm kidding. But, you know, I didn't know what to do. I was kind of stuck. Didn't have much direction. But I guess in the past month, I've been having a good time doing just a lot of things, working, writing, putting together an anthology, rebuilding my publishing company, which I'm very excited about, and also of most import, I've been collecting, cataloging my comic book collection.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's an app called CLZ that lets you scan the barcodes on the computers. On your computer.
And life affirming.
It's amazing. I've done just under 500 in the past like 2 days. And wow. I'm not talking about like killing myself, like I'm gonna get this done. I'm just sitting here
boop, casually
boop, 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 and it's done.
Wow. You got to send me the link because
awesome.
You know, I have like 2,000 comics I don't know what to do with.
Yeah, same. Like, I have a lot of comics, and I'm excited. Like, I know what I have now.
Wow.
And I have a lot of Buffy the Vampire Slayer comics.
Ooh.
Yeah, like, I found that the my largest, because I have them set up in steel filing cabinets. And the first drawer that I'm doing, in this drawer, it's like Buffy and Angel are like my largest numbers. Like they're like 16% of the comics that I have.
Wow.
Yeah. Hmm. So
that is a lot. I have. I only have the season 8 run. I think that's what it's called. I have that whole run, but I didn't even know there was stuff after that. But I really liked season 8.
Yeah, the season 8 was good. Then season 9. I didn't go after season 9.
Okay.
But there's also a similar Angel that takes place since like a season 6.
Hmm.
And that's called Angel After the Fall. And it was really good.
Wow. I'm really impressed, and I got to get that link from you.
I will get that to you.
Joanna, how the heck have you been?
What you been doing, girl?
I mean, I feel like I feel like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day, honestly.
I'll take your little land in mine. There ain't no hill or mountain we can climb.
Oh, man. I mean, honestly, once school ended, I was really good with this stuff when I was still teaching because it gave me something that I had to really focus on. I had to keep schedules and things. But once school ended, it's been a really big blur. And it's been hard to even, I seriously don't even know what day it is sometimes. So I think jumping back into this is going to be awesome because, you know, when we were doing it, we were doing it on a schedule and it'll help to keep the whole rest of my life focused, Alaric, the whole rest of it.
I like it. I've been thinking about that, the lack of focus. And this is a, you know, even just trying to get this one recorded, you know, we kept falling down this little rabbit hole of like, okay, I've got, can we move it? And can we move it? And we kept kind of bouncing back and forth. And it's like, because it is when you have just this wide open space, it's not that we're not doing things, but like it's so different when you're stationary in your own home. You're not moving back and forth. I mean, Travis, even you had a funny story about how like, oh, I'm going to do something different today, and I'm going to call in an order to a restaurant. And it was like, it nuked your entire day.
Blew it up.
Yeah.
And normally it would be so easy. You would just go and get it. Not a big deal.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and what I've been doing has not too dissimilar. I'm just trying to keep busy doing some little side projects. You know, I had this dream at the beginning of this 4 months ago. I'm going to organize the apartment. I've done zero of that. but I've been doing other things and doing family things and prepping stuff. And I think it's been good. I wrote a post about this the other day that was like all about time that you never get back because you're commuting and you're at work, and having all of that given back to you, and how you kind of forget how special that is. And if there's one thing I can take from this, it's like, I'm just with them all the time. I don't even think about it. And, you know, I used to feel guilty about, okay, I'm going to slink away and do something on my own. Now it's like, oh, I'm going to do something on my own because I'm spending, it's like so easy to sort of
spread
myself out a little bit.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I don't know how I'm going to reintegrate back into like real life once this sort of, like, I've taken so much more time for myself and exercising and baking and reading and doing all these things. It's like, I'm not sure how I don't know that I'll fare very well jumping back into like actual life.
No.
I'll be honest, I don't want to give it back to them. And no. I say that.
Me neither.
And like, any, you know, and the
man.
World.
The man.
Yeah. The universe.
Yeah.
You know, like, why am I going to give back that time that I spend in my car when I can just walk up the stairs and say hi to my family?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's been totally true. It's been so awesome. Like, I've actually noticed that my youngest was getting tall. You know, it was in like shock. It was like, you know, wow, you're turning into a tall person and you're right here in front of me. I get to see this on a daily basis.
Yeah, you catch glimpses of people a lot more than you sort of take it for granted.
Yeah.
Like, I'm seeing them every morning and every afternoon and every evening, and so those like micro changes you're more aware of.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. So we're reading a book, The Amber Spyglass, mm-hmm. which we're diving back into. Yeah. I think we want to get through this book, right? So
yeah,
we did chapter 15, The Forge. And Joanna, did you happen to spend a little time putting together a long time ago a synopsis?
I did. I'm going to hope it still rings as true today as the time I wrote it. So here we go. At the same time Lyra and Will are talking, Tialis and Salmakia are holding their own conversation about the knife. They know they must keep even closer to Will now that the knife is being mended. Salmakia believes that they can win Lyra over and use her to keep close to Will. Tialis is not so easily convinced. Skeptical, they watch as York begins preparations to mend the knife. Children return from the woods, and York enlists them to help as he mends the knife, with Lyra overseeing the gas pit while Will tends to the fire. York warns Will that the knife will look different after it is mended. He performs his craft with precision. As he meticulously joins the pieces of the knife, York calls on Will to hold the pieces of the knife together with his mind. In doing so, Will can feel each atom of the knife linked to one another, strengthening and straightening themselves into a new blade. When the forging is finally complete, York, Lyra, and Will fall into an exhaustion. York asks Will to follow him out into the cold, dark mountainside. Once there, York says that the knife should not have been made and reveals that he is troubled, expressing doubts about having fixed the knife. Fearing he has been foolish like Yofur Rankinson, York asks Will what he plans to do with the knife. Will explains the plan to go to the world of the dead. York tells Will that if he wants to succeed in his task, he must put aside all thoughts of his mother. They return to the cave where York tells Will to stay with the knife so he can say farewell to Lyra. Will examines the newly mended knife, which is shorter and more dull, and determines it is ugly. Lyra returns from her farewell talk with York and tells Will that everything seems to be falling on them, even though they are too young for such responsibility. Wary of the impending arrival of the gyrocopters, Will and Lyra test the knife and open a window to sleep in another world. The Galavespians protest, insisting the children stay. Will tells Tialis that they're leaving, so they can either come along to the other side or die trying to stop them. Once through the window to the other world, Will and Lyra immediately fall asleep, while the Gallivespians open the Lodestone Resonator and begin playing a message into the darkness. It's been a little while, but impressions of this chapter.
So, when we talked about it earlier, we said that it was kind of a straightforward chapter, not a lot of twists, turns, things along those lines. But what I liked so much about it were some of the neat visuals. I think, reforging that knife was really neat, and for a number of reasons, and one of which, I told you guys about, that it felt like Ash making his chainsaw hand in Army of Darkness. But again, it goes a little bit beyond that too. I mean, like, the knife, it's a subtle knife, it's magical, and at the same time it's also like cosmic, and I just imagine that there were all these like eldritch energies and things like at play, and it was just really neat.
One of my favorite, of course, the you just mentioned in the synopsis, Joanna, is how different it looked, and Yorick was like, it's going to look different, and sure enough it looks different, but I almost pictured, in the course, to me Damascus steel is like one of the most beautiful types of metal, but what it is, it's like folded over and folded over and folded over, so there's this kind of wave in it, right? And I wonder if a Damascus steel blade, if it was shattered and then put together, so there was waves and then there were like jagged shards, whether there would be a beauty in that too. And I feel like there really would be. And I'd like to see what a prop person could do with this, because I mm-hmm. think it could still be beautiful. Will's like, it's ugly. It's like, I don't know. Is it? It seems it's lost some of its, its color, but it has these jagged edges built into it now that I wonder that speaks to more of what the subtle knife really is.
Yeah, and it reminds me, and I can't think of the actual name of it, but there's a Japanese technique where when something is broken, they fill the cracks back in with gold, and they're visible. It's visible, and it becomes more beautiful because of the flaw, because of the imperfection. And it was kind of what I was thinking about here. I know that Will thought it was ugly, but this idea that it has... it's like, this is going to sound like a weird analysis, but like stretch marks after you have a baby. Like, yeah, but what an amazing thing that my body has just done. Mm-hmm. What an amazing process, and look what has come forth because of that. And so it's like, I don't know, I kind of felt that way about the like rebirth of this knife. I hope his attitude toward the knife changes.
It still works. Well, that's good. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Thinking about what, the fact that they built a piecemeal forge in a cave, and a bear basically used a chunk of his armor, and they used gathered materials and stones that they found and were able to, this thing that was made in a way that is almost inexplainable. A character in this book, an armored bear, figured out how to put it all back together. It's kind of amazing. And they just had, branches and stones and a chunk of his, his back armor.
Yeah, they built a tool for interdimensional travel in a cave by a bear.
Yeah. With, by the way, no help from the little people.
No help.
The Gallivespians were less than helpful.
Yes.
I feel like the littleness would have been advantageous or something that could have been helpful in that scenario. And these poor kids, they're kids, by the way, these poor kids are getting just charred and burned and singed and breathing smoke. Oh, God.
I mean, that's basically those kids' lives at this point.
Right. I mean, at least they could have done was like, offered them some water, like, hey, do you want some water? Or hey, can I fan that for you for like a minute? Like, there was,
but they're super tiny.
Yeah, they're small, but yeah, I feel like they could, you know, they could throw some little branches on there, right?
They could, or they could have brought somebody something to drink, or but they were just beforehand. I don't know, they were kind of spiteful. It felt like they were being a bit spiteful.
Do you get a sense of how long it took? I kind of was trying to figure that out. I feel like it took a while, but it wasn't super clear how long it took.
To me, I think it's days.
Oh, okay.
Like, I was thinking days. Like, that was really like a ding, ding, like really hard.
They're awake the whole time. I mean, and they're exhausted by the end of it. So it's more than, you know, it's more than an hour and a half, but it's shorter than X, Y, you know, not sure what the shorter than, but it's long enough where they're just completely spent by the end of it.
I think I'm just saying it like days, just because I feel like for a bear to make interdimensional travel possible in a cave using rocks, it should take a little bit of time.
Yeah. So
I don't know.
Well,
I felt like it was, I just felt like it was maybe more like hours. I mean, hours and hours, but not days. Like maybe like 12 hours, because they're exhausted, but also but that exhaustion doesn't just come from like physically being tired from having done some of those things. It's also this mental exhaustion, which we all know how that feels coming home from a long day at work. You know, how exhausted you could feel mentally, like the amount of emotional and mental energy that they all had to put in, because, you know, Will couldn't slip at all. Like, he had to keep everything straight, or it would have been like nothing happened at all for this knife. Lyra, who is such a, you know, she never wants to let Will down. And so therefore she's exhausted and tired, but she's pushing herself to this other point. And then I think the amount of precision that Yorick needs to use, I can only imagine that the amount of focus and energy it took for him. So I don't know. I guess I'm going down a little bit of an unnecessary rabbit trail, but I felt like it was more just like 10 to 12 hours. I'm done.
Okay.
Think about how long. That is so long.
It is long.
Oh my God. Like, I haven't even been awake for 10, 12 hours today, and I'm already done. And I haven't done anything. I've just done Zoom meetings all day.
You haven't been holding a knife that goes to other worlds together in your mind all day? Then what have you been doing? I mean,
I'm a real letdown.
If you're not doing that,
I'm an embarrassment. Oh boy. Who was the Looney Tunes character that his son was always embarrassed of him? It wasn't Sylvester, but it was like one. There was one of the characters. I'm gonna figure this out.
Was it the Chicken Hawk?
Chicken Hawk. Yes, it was the Chicken Hawk.
For shame! For shame!
Yes. That's what my children. My children look at me that way. So the Galavespians, they sort of weigh in on Will and Lyra and continue to do so. They are, you know, they have a task. They still have a task, and they're still spies. They are what they are. But they have an interesting opinion about Will and Lyra, one of which is that Will appears to be the one that they need to focus on, and they diminish Lyra a little bit. They don't feel like she has as much agency as we know she does. Do you have a take on that? How are they reading that? Like, if you were them, not knowing the backstories of these two kids, would you automatically say, oh, Will's the, he's not the alpha, but Will's sort of steering this vessel?
Well, considering Lyra has been unconscious for a great deal of the time that
they weren't around for him.
But they were with Will.
Yeah.
So they got to see, you know, Will's man of action period. And a lot of this has really been Will rescuing Lyra. You know, so that whole operation has gone down. They didn't see anything before that. And, you know, but also, I kind of, you know, I think that even before, even in the previous books, Will is the first person that Lyra has ever deferred to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
I was going to say the same kind of thing. I think that what the Galavespians are seeing and mistaking, you know, is her deep affection for Will, this is the first time, I mean, because it didn't really do it for Roger. She puts things for herself aside for Will, and she's never done that for anybody else before. I mean, she didn't even remember to say goodbye to Roger, who was her, like, only friend in that first book. She was just like, ABC, and he was gone. And so I think that what they're seeing and they're mistaking as submission, do you know what I mean? Or maybe mistaking as weakness or like a crack they can get in is really just them seeing what I think is takes what takes more strength, which is to care more about somebody else than you do yourself. Mm-hmm. So I do think they mistake that. And I'm curious because it seems to me that the Galvespians, you know, society and culture, I mean, they have female spies that seem to be same level, you know, as like male spies. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, so it's very clear, at least in Oxford, what that kind of, sexism looked like in their culture and in the way the society was made up. But we don't really have a sense of that in the Galvespians. And I would think that it seems like it's even, but yeah, that kind of my take on it.
Yeah. And, you know, if we can sort of jump ahead to the end of this chapter, just to sort of tie this point to how the chapter ends, is they... maybe not that they underestimated Lyra, but they get a little bit of a wake-up call to understand the dynamic between Will and Lyra specifically. It's not so much about, oh, well, Lyra's this type of thing and Will is this type of thing. It's that together they're almost like two halves of a whole. Mm-hmm. And Lyra's side carries a certain amount of the responsibility and what she chooses to do and how he follows and how he protects her. But this lying boy, every episode, do we talk about lying? the lying is such a key part. She's able to deceive them because they are not paying attention to her. Mm-hmm. They listen, they are aware of her, but she makes decisions. She's making this choice. The land of the dead is her choice. Mm-hmm. And Will is on board.
Yep.
Not a little bit. He's going. He gets almost his butt kicked by a giant bear because, you know, he's holding back, you know, but that's what's happening. And you think they probably are not going to make that mistake again. They made it once. They're never going to make it again.
Right.
But they go. They're going.
Also, they're, you know, 12, 13, I mean, they do stupid stuff.
Yeah, they're kiddos.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, even as adults, you know, if we were heroes, I can't imagine going to Land of Dead. Maybe I'll be back. Maybe I won't. You know, I feel like there'd be a lot more hand-wringing over the possibility of jumping into the Land of the Dead.
I walk past more people than I can count that are in their 30s and 40s and 50s not wearing masks.
Mm-hmm.
When it's like, that's easy to do, right? So they're making bad choices and they're fully grown.
That's true.
So, you know, everybody makes bad choices.
That's true.
But, yeah, it's like they're maturing rapidly because of what's going on and what they have to do and the choices they make. But they make these kind of gut decisions, you know? I think that they're sort of still driven by this youthful exuberance. Maybe like exuberance sounds happier than what's going on, but you know what I mean? Like this sort of propulsive excitement. Like they just go.
The optimism that.
Yeah, we're doing it.
What I want to do is going to work out.
Yeah.
They still don't know what they can't do.
Yeah. Like my youngest, you guys have probably both experienced this, but like, he will get on top of something that is definitely something he should get on top of. And I'm like, you got to get down. That's not safe. Please be careful. And he's like, I'm being careful.
How am I not careful?
No, I mean, but seriously, you need to get
down. Yeah, we used to say our youngest lived life head first.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. You lead with your head, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally get it. And not the brain, just the bone.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get it.
And you have to remind her that your brain is in there.
Yeah. It bounces. There's some liquid in there, but, you know, it jostles around a little bit. I didn't want to leave the Forge behind completely yet. It was awe-inspiring, and it's very like cinematic how it looks and how it works. Mm-hmm. The one thing that maybe stood out to me, other than just sort of the stress of it and the sort of the overwhelming thing that they're doing in a cave, was Yurik picking up the burning pieces out of the Forge with his claws, and it just basically burning through his claws while he moved it from place to place. I was like, whoa, like that was such an image. That was really the smell of the Forge. I mean, you could really smell his claws burning, you know. It's like, whoa, that's the strength and like what he's doing and how strong he is and how that probably maybe doesn't hurt because of what a claw is, but man, you know, it's hot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I mean the amount of heat that it would take to burn a fingernail, you know, multiply that by like a polar bear's claw. My God, that's nuts.
It is. Yeah, I love that. We do once the knife is made, they have to leave it to cool, and Lyra and you know, the Galavespians allow them to kind of leave and converse alone because they're not worried about them leaving without the knife. Mm-hmm. This gives us some opportunity for characters outside of the Galavespians to speak a little bit more freely. One scene in particular, and I referenced it before, was Yurik really questioning himself and his choice to ultimately repair the knife, which he was 50-50 on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe not even 50-50, but he was like, look, I'm going to do it. I don't know if it's the right choice. After he does it, he fully believes that he made the wrong choice.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I think so.
I think that's spot on. He did not think he did it. He made the right choice. And then Will has to go back and say, tell him about, compare it to the first bear's armor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think, which is interesting because when Will does that, and I'm trying to find exactly where it says it, but he's like, well, didn't you feel this? You know, he's like, didn't you feel the same way about the armor? And he's like, well, yeah, at first, but it became part of our custom and it became part of our, you know, like our tradition. And so therefore, you know, the attitude toward it had changed. It's interesting to me that he compares himself to Yurik Rankinson. I find that to be, you know, who is like the weakest example of a bear.
Right.
You know what I mean? Well, and so like, he is saying like, doing
unbear-like things, you know, he's saying that he's not acting like a bear.
Right. And I think it, you know, one of the reasons that might be is because of his love for Lyra. Mm-hmm. That, you know, maybe that it's clouded. And I don't mean that in a bad way because it's love, you know, but that he says, I stepped outside the bear nature in mending this knife. I think I've been as foolish as Yofur Rankinson. And, you know, he was foolish because he had wanted things and had this weird, you know, relationship with Marissa. And I feel like some of that, even though the relationship isn't bad, that it is that relationship that goes outside of bear nature, because aren't bears supposed to be solitary? Like, they're solitary. They live in like this big community, but they aren't together. And he loves Lyra. Like, he loves her. And I think that's why he knew he could do it. And he said, I'll do it. But he also knew it was probably the wrong thing to do. And I'll be honest, I can think of times I made that same choice for someone that I loved or cared about, knowing I probably shouldn't do that, but I'm going to do it because I know it is what you need right now, and I'll do this for you, you know?
Yeah.
But I feel bad that he comes down on himself quite so hard, you know?
Yeah. You know, he's going through a lot here. That, I took off my headphones, so I apologize if you already mentioned it, but he, not only is he, you know, the knife is a concern to him, but he's like, I got to get these bears out of here. Did you already talk about that?
Nope.
He's already like, we don't belong here. You know, is, it's like, yeah, we need to we gotta back go up back, up. Even if we just live in the water. I was like, whoa, can you imagine? It's like, we don't belong here. So much so, we're just going to go back to our melted world and just live there until stuff gets better, you know?
Right.
It's so kind of like, you know, slumping your shoulders acceptance of like, well, you know, I guess this didn't work. That's kind of a bummer. A lot of that is a bummer. And the goodbye is a bummer.
Yeah, the goodbye, again, it's just like if his acknowledgement that bears don't have ghosts was a little...
Yeah, that this is like, is it just because he's basically like a non-believer? So, well, you know, we don't have a... Is that... He's just very wise and understands that? Or is it deeper than that?
I think it's the accepted truth for bears. I think it's something that in that world, you know, the ghost is connected to the demon.
The demon,
and
yeah.
If you don't have a demon, you don't have a ghost.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. There really is. And, you know, I don't even think Pullman has gotten all the way through it. Someone asked him on Twitter about... if someone lived a certain amount of their life and then came out as gay at some point in their life, sort of came to whatever realization that is and then comes out, would their demon change sex or change orientation or something? He was like, you know, I got to think about that. He was like, really like, oh, there's more to think about. I'll get back to you.
I'm dreading his answer now.
Oh God. I know.
Oh God.
Oh yeah. You don't want to do that with the JK.
Rowling has terrified me about what the answer could be.
Pullman has been like totally the opposite of Earth. You know, he's been like,
he has.
He's very much.
But I also feel like he sort of gave us an answer though in the first book. I mean, there's that one servant in the kitchen, I think, and he has a. Right? Doesn't he have a male?
He has the same sex. Yes, he has the same sex.
And we had we had questioned then. Yeah, and we had questioned then. Like, I mean, again, he made it a point to say how gentle this guy was, like just how he was different in lots of ways. And so I'm wondering if that wasn't, you know, instead of outrightly coming out and saying something like that, that it wasn't just a more subtle way to say, well, look, like this happens, and when it does, you know. So it does happen, at least, you know, when it does, I don't know. And that was my first assumption you know, it was like, oh, though he must be, you know, he must be gay. And it was, I thought it was a really interesting and gentle and sweet way to sort of show it without making it more than it needed to be, or, you know, it didn't need to be a point of something. It was just this nice little observation that broadened and deepened the world a little bit. So I don't know. Maybe I hope that's what his answer would come back and be.
Oh God, let's not get back.
Pullman, isn't that your answer?
Finish this book and be positive about it. My kid is reading the Ichabod, which is the Rowling thing that she's putting out, and she started a long time ago, and she really likes it, and so they're still reading it. But you know, of course, my daughter hasn't read any of these tweets, so I guess it can still. You know what? Art from the artist, I guess.
My older daughter, who is extremely woke and aware on a number of levels, particularly these issues, is still reading her books. The explanation is that you know, she wrote the books; they're there. They have the message that she can take from them, and she's not giving her any more money. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
She doesn't have to go out and buy them again and give and support her any more than she already has.
Right. And man, it's like, not to go off on a tangent here, but like, it's odd to see someone, no matter what the, you know, the thing you decide to talk about, whether whatever it is, what a weird thing to like double down and triple down, quadruple down. It's like,
really?
Hey, you said it once and then people like blew you up and it's like, oh, well, you know.
Guess I won't say that again.
I'm not going to say ever again. It's like, but just like doubling down, tripling down, quadrupling down, quintupling down, it just goes on and on and on. She will not drop it.
Yeah.
Like, good Lord.
Yeah. I would love to know. I would love to have a conversation with her to know what her end goal is.
Is there like, some experience that she's had that has been very personal that this is so ingrained?
She spoke to it in an article about what she says is the reason behind this, but I can't put the two together.
It is a minefield to try to think about and discuss like what being trans is without being trans myself. I'm just like, I'll stay away from it. What she's saying is like, what makes a person a woman is so much about their experience of like living as a woman when you're growing up. Is that what I'm getting at? Is that what she's getting at? And then that's like, okay, I'm going to die on this hill.
Yeah.
That's it. There's no other way to define this. There's no like nuance. This is it. If you grow up and you have a period and whatever, that's it. There's no other way to sort of have a female experience. And right. I'm a white man. I don't know anything, but.
And I don't know anything about it. I'll be honest. I know very little except for the fact that they say that they're women. And it's not up to me to say they're not. That's where I draw the line. That's basically my position. I don't need to understand it.
Of course.
They understand their lives much more than I do.
This is us like staying out of people's business.
Right. It's exactly.
You should be able to live your life as you want. And that's what's great about, it's great about some of the world and some of the places that we live. It's like, if I decided tomorrow to live a different type of life, I'm allowed to do that. Nobody can say whether I can't.
That's the thing. And yeah, I mean, it doesn't boil down to whether or not there's science behind it or any of those things. That's the life that they live.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
Yeah. 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 And they're so at risk. They're so at risk. Again, it's another one of those things. This is not the time or place to have this discussion.
Most of it's because that society keeps asking these questions and demanding these answers from them.
Mm-hmm.
Let them live.
Yes. Yes. I mean, sorry to get off on a tangent. It was a little bit of a tangent. It was a lot of a tangent.
However,
I mean, worth talking about. I don't want to diminish what it is.
Absolutely.
But, and, you know, Pullman, it's interesting that he's weighing in on it and that, you know, what he brought to the table in the first book. We're kind of at the end here about, you know, their departure, what they've decided to do, and the Galavaspians realizing, I guess we are committing, they have to follow them. They can't stay behind. They can't just go back empty-handed. It's not that they're invested in the mission. They aren't, right? I don't think they're invested at all in this side mission. But they've got to keep an eye on the knife. They feel like these two individuals are incredibly important to what's going on. And, you know, they're not going to fly back to, you know, Azrael and be like, oh, they left. They're going to the land of the dead.
Sorry, Lord Azrael.
There's some really good passages here, and I wanted to read a couple of them. They're really short. This one, again, it's another sort of Pullman's magic. The only light came from the pale reflection in the snowbank of the remains of the fire, and that in turn was reflected from her wet cheeks, and her tears found their own reflection in Will's eyes, and so those photons wove the two children together in a silent web.
Mm-hmm.
Come on now.
Like, I kind of hate him for that.
Ugh.
Like, stuff like that makes me angry. Like, that's so gorgeous.
It's just spilling forth onto the page. Mm-hmm. It's just really...
Mm-hmm.
And so much of this is really about interwoven souls and the cosmos, and like this just bring it just perfectly without taking you out of the plot. This is like bringing that point home again and again and again. It's so good.
I just love how the closer we get to the end, the more obvious that theme is becoming.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And think about the Land of the Dead, what we're going to get down there. Mm-hmm. Now, that's going to be existential. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's going to be something. I had a hot take. You ready for my hot take?
Yes.
Ready.
I read this next passage and I thought about America and where we are now and what's happening, not necessarily the pandemic, but the current political climate. I thought about Black Lives Matter. I thought about equal rights and the Supreme Court. I thought a lot about what's going on in the past, you know, month, 6 weeks, 2 months. And let me just read it and then give you my hot take. This is Lyra talking about Yurik. And he looked so old. He looked hungry and old and sad. It is all coming on to us now, Will. We can't rely on anyone else now, can we? It's just us. But we aren't old enough yet. We're only young. We're too young. It's all coming on to us. What's got to be done? To me, and the reason why I felt a lot about the country was that the young people are here to save us, I hope, because America is not literally, but it's looking old right now. And tired and sick and sad and pathetic in a lot of ways. And when you see the vibrant young people that are active and excited and energized and angry and pushing and pushing and pushing, it was like ringing a bell in my head that this is what it's about. Do you see what I'm saying?
I mean, that's... Totally, totally. And I'm just thinking about that line about how we're too young. And it's always the way. Like, nobody's ever ready to be the generation in charge. You know? Like, nobody ever says, oh, I'm ready. It's time. Like, except I think Gen X. I feel like we had that time. We're like the Prince Charles of generations. Like, we've had that time, but the boomers just won't go anywhere. So we're going to get like 10 minutes and that's it. Mm-hmm. And we may have gotten that 10 minutes in Barack Obama already. Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I mean, I don't feel old and tired, but I feel like there are attitudes that exist that we have to live next to that are just so old and tired. Mm-hmm. There are arguments that we have to have that are just so old and tired.
Oh, my God, yes. And,
oh, yeah.
I mean, just the things that we were talking about before. Why are we still talking about this in 2020? Why are we still talking about, you know, why is, like, lynching law still being held up on the Senate floor in 2020? You know? Mm-hmm. Like, we're well past the point where we should be talking about this stuff, and yet we are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I shouldn't have to explain to my kids what that means, except in retrospect. You know? Mm-hmm. It's just... But at the same time, I don't feel like I want to give them this problem yet. I don't even want to give, like, kids who are 10, 15 years older than my kids this problem yet.
It's like, the weight of the world, right?
Yeah.
You're not, they shouldn't have to carry it yet.
Yeah. I mean, we're still viable, you know?
Sure.
And I look at it, and so is Yurik.
He is. You know,
he may for a minute look old and tired.
He's singed, and he just spent, Joanna, 12 hours making this, fixing this stupid knife. Of course he looks like a wreck. You know, I mean, if his whiskers didn't survive that. He's got no whiskers. Yeah. He is, he's got matted fur. He's a mess.
Exactly. But he's going to be all right.
That's Gen X right now. We're going to come out strong, baby. We're going to grow those back. We're going to look just bright and beautiful. I'm going to be swimming.
Oh, we're the polar bear generation.
That's right. Digression.
Give me some salmon.
Complete.
Give me some salmon. Wait, no, those are brown bears. So what do polar bears eat? Seals.
Seals, yeah.
Yeah, give me a seal.
Give me a seal. So we finished up this little chapter. We're going to move on to chapter 16 next week, and hopefully next week. Any other thoughts about this chapter or any genre entertainment that you would like to give a shout out to?
Yes. There are television things to talk about with regards to season two of The Golden Compass.
Yes, the please.
The Star Materials, excuse me. I'm still thinking of the old movie. So, yeah. The girl who plays Lyanna Mormont in Game of Thrones, the child that I wanted to be my daughter, she is going to be in season two of His Dark Materials.
Exciting.
She is going to play Angelica.
That is exciting.
And it's Bella Ramsey, by the way. She has a real name that's not Lyanna Mormont. She is going to play Angelica. So I'm very, very excited.
I love that. I love the casting. Ooh. I like, honestly, I wouldn't even know what she looks like now because she was so little in Game of Thrones. But mm-hmm. I like the casting. You know, I remember when they casted her as Lady Mormont and they were like, we got to use her more because she was so good. And they were like, put her in every scene that we're up in the cold, stick her in there somewhere.
Well, she's in our house all the time. Mm. We watch, my younger daughter watches The Worst Witch on Netflix.
Oh, is she in that?
And she is the star of The Worst Witch, and it's an adorable show.
Oh,
and she's also the voice actress of Hilda.
Oh, I love Hilda.
Hilda was amazing.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
And, yeah, so she's the lead on that. So, you know, she is fantastic, and we'll definitely be watching season. Not that we weren't going to anyway, but we're definitely going to, knowing that she's on. And I think you were telling us, Alec, earlier about a panel at San Diego Comic-Con.
Yes, the His Dark Materials panel will be, you know, San Diego Comic-Con is online only this year, as you would expect. And it's free for everybody, and they're doing 350 panels. That is a lot. Over the course of a full week, it's not just going to be 4 days. It'll be a 6 or 7 day week. And there's a lot of entertainment, a lot of interesting stuff going on, and one of which is His Dark Materials, which, of course, we're going to be anxious to see. And I'm also anxious, like, how far along they were, are, is. But I believe that the air date has not changed. It will be coming back in November. So
considering it's filmed in countries, you know, where people have sense, then they'll probably be.
Yeah. Well, you would think it's all special effects at this point. You know, it's in the can.
That's true.
So yeah, I'll make sure next week. I mentioned what specific time. I think it's an hour long panel and it's in the afternoon. But I'm sorry that I don't have that information. So that's very exciting. Joanna, any other His Dark Materials stuff?
I mean, not from my end. I'll be quite honest here. I fell off a wagon big time. So I'm jumping back on the horse here. But I feel a little behind. You guys are still like actually watching things and, and paying attention to tweets, and I'm like, I'm in a dark hole.
Once the kids are in bed, and it's late, but now I just get up and casually drink a cup of coffee. I don't have to commute. It's a whole other thing. I can stay up later.
Yeah.
I have been consuming a lot of genre. Let me do a couple quick recommendations. There's a movie on Amazon called Vast as the Night.
I want to watch that so badly.
Terrific. Awesome. It is a independent film that got like a couple festival showings, but it was, everything went down. Amazon bought it up. So now you can watch it on Prime. It is, I don't want to give too much away, but it's very interesting. It's super talky, lots of dialogue, but it's really fun. It's kind of 50s style paranoia. And there is a extraordinary single take that is almost worth watching it just for that. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is crushing it this season. I hope you guys like that show because it's wonderful. And this season is
behind.
Oh my! Last season was great too.
I didn't see last season at all. Last time I saw it was they held hands. What's his name was about to die. And
oh my God! You got, get on the wagon.
There are so many shows.
So good.
I know that's
there's awesome. So many shows. I just watched Dark.
Yeah.
I have.
I love Dark.
Started
Dark was
it.
So good.
Yes, yeah, I'm in season one, so don't tell me anything.
Season three, didn't it just drop?
It's out.
Yeah. Now. Oh, I powered through that in 2 days.
Yeah.
That was so.
Oh
good.
My gosh. I
really like it. It's
I,
Dark.
I didn't. We didn't start it. Dark. Oh you'll yeah. Like
it. You guys are gonna love it. You're gonna yeah. love it. And I'm watching Orphan Black.
Orphan Black's a lot of fun.
I saw that.
So good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So good. I firstly, I love Canadian sci-fi. Mm-hmm. This is my thing. I would wear a Canadian sci-fi t-shirt if that was a thing. I love every show that comes out of it. Because I just showed my older one yesterday an episode of My Secret Identity.
Mm.
That's how far back I go with Canadian wow. sci-fi. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, there's well always been a rich transit. Yeah. And we, you know, we shoot a lot of our stuff up there now. So I think mm-hmm. it's all Canadian at this point.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So good. And I've been watching a little bit too much horror. You know, what's funny about, there was a study, and I'm using for the podcast listeners, broad quotes here. Eric. There was a study, quote unquote, that, hardcore horror movie fans are weathering the pandemic better than those who are not horror fans. And I was like, no wonder I'm doing so great.
Yeah. What's the best thing you've seen so far?
Horror?
Yes.
That's a good question. I watched a movie called Dark Skies.
That's
which
good.
It's really good. It got a terrible release, and it's one of those things where do not watch the trailer. It was a terrible trailer. It was too. It told you too much stuff.
Yes.
It's mm-hmm. terrific. It's got Kerry Russell in the yep. lead. Kind of a paranoid, scary, I don't even want to say anything about it, but Dark Skies is wonderful. I am about halfway through Sinister, which I hadn't seen.
Love Sinister.
Ethan Hawke. Oh my God. Talk about yes. freaky. It's super freaky. I haven't even been, I had to stop it. And I watch a lot of horror. I had to stop it because it's freaking me out too much.
The end is going to break your brain.
Like, really, I can't wait.
Keep a light on.
I can't wait. So that I'm digging through that now. There's a bunch of other stuff that I've got queued up. And there's something called IFC After Dark. And ooh. I'm sort of mulling, maybe doing a 1 or 2 month thing on that because they've got a couple picks that are new releases. They bought up some horror movies that were supposed to go into theaters. And one that I saw called Relic came out on that service today. Okay. Which looks really interesting, and it's another one of those things like maybe I want to go in cold. So yeah,
okay,
gobbling it up, baby.
Okay, I just saw Girl with the Girl with all the gifts.
Yeah, yes. The zombie movie, right?
So good.
Yeah,
so good.
Is it zombie or vampire?
Zombie.
Doesn't have Helen Mirren in that?
No, it's Glenn Close.
Glenn Close, yes.
Yes. Yeah, she's amazing too. One other announcement before we go. Joanne and I are going to be doing another podcast at some point in the very near future to support my new publishing company, Variance Media. Joanne is going to be the co-host of Variance Cast. We're going to be doing interviews with diverse sci-fi, fantasy, and horror creators. And when I say diverse, I'm talking, you know, racial, ethnic, sexual, gender, any kind, and any folks who are outside your typical sci-fi creator box, we are going to be talking to them. So very excited to be doing that.
That sounds awesome. We'll link to that once it's up. We'll link to it on our platforms, and I can't wait to hear it.
Yes. All right, y'all.
All right. We'll see you soon. Hopefully next week. And we're back, baby.
Woot.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.